You're listening to Down to Agribusiness with the Irish Farmers Journal.
Hi folks, I'm Jack Kennedy. Welcome to this week's Down to Agribusiness. Once again, joined by Anne Finnegan and Phelim O'Neill from our agribusiness team. Folks, good to have you on the show again. And I might start with you, I suppose, in the general media beginning to kind of anticipate what's going to happen in terms of the emission targets. Obviously, agriculture, we have a range that we know about between 22 and 30%, but the impact of either of those is quite significant, Anne, and you're going through some of that on a journal this week. You have a super piece on kind of the impact of which either 22 or 30%, what it'll have in terms of euros. Talk to me.
Yeah, so this, I suppose, is a little refresher in terms of analysis the Irish Farmers Journal had conducted last autumn by KPMG. And I suppose this week we're looking at, you know, the two ends of that scale that have been talked about, the range that's been given by the government for agriculture, so 22 to 30%. And I started at 30% emissions reductions. And I did that because last week when Laura Burke, who's the head of the Environmental Protection Agency, spoke on Morning Ireland, she actually talked about the need for farming to reduce methane emissions by 30%, which I thought was interesting to split the gases out in the conversation because that's not the basis on which it's been discussed before. So that's where we started. And look, a 30% reduction would overall see economic losses of 3.1 billion on Irish farms, largely on beef and dairy farms. We're talking about significant livestock cuts, so reducing dairy stock by 18% and beef stock by 22% in that scenario. So very deep impact on the sector as a whole, and looking at job losses right across the food supply chain of about in the region of 56,000. If you look at the 21% emissions reduction scenario that KPMG looked at, this is looking at much, much smaller livestock herd cuts. So you're talking about 6% in the dairy herd and 5% in the, or 6% I'd say in the beef herd and 5% in the dairy herd, like relatively small reductions in cattle numbers, but a very significant economic impact at 1.1 billion, both at farm level and at processor level. That's the combined impact. So I suppose that's the context for what we were talking about this week. I should say, look, that the Climate Change Advisory Council prepared a technical report last year when they put together the carbon budgets for the government initially, and they looked at the economic losses, that the potential for economic losses in agriculture, and this is based on Chagas Kvapri analysis. They only looked at primary agriculture, but they looked at something, they came out something similar. So for a 20% reduction in emissions, Chagas analysis identified a 719 million economic loss at farm level. And for 33%, which is going beyond what we're talking about here, a 1.8 billion euro loss at farm level. And it's the only sector that the CCAC report identified an economic loss on. The other sectors, they're talking about, you know, a combined average investment in the region of 5 billion required between now and 2030, but it's not considering economic losses in any other sector.
And then, I mean, you're putting this piece out there now because I suppose the thinking is that the government are going to come with these sector emission targets, the definitive number sooner rather than later.
That's right, yeah. And I think, I think that you're right. You know, we're hearing an awful lot more about it in the media. It was always forecast to land in around June. So the expectation is that the sector emission ceilings are going to be known in the next coming weeks. And I suppose, look, the stakes are very significant for agriculture. And I think it's only right for us to at least discuss it.
So I hear you in terms of the 30%. It's a significant reduction in actual numbers, so beef cows or dairy cows, the 20% or 21% is not as big in terms of reduction, but at the same time it does put a cap either sector, like either whether it's either 21% or the 30% reduction, it puts a cap on, I suppose, the future growth in those sectors. Is that fair to say, Anne? Which is kind of very different to where we have been.
Yeah. And I think more than putting a cap on it, I think in fairness, if you're going out to 30%, you are looking at rolling back substantially from where we have been. The magnitude of the livestock cuts and the economic loss that we're talking about in rural Ireland. So, I mean, I suppose there's a couple of points that are worth noting about agriculture. It's a little bit different because 60% of the emissions in agriculture are methane. And I suppose without getting too technical, the science of methane is that it's a short-lived gas, has a lifetime of about 12 years in the atmosphere. So different to carbon dioxide, which lives for about 100 years in the atmosphere. But it is very potent and it causes an awful lot of warming in that 12 years. What scientists have said to us is what's required in regards to methane is to stabilize methane. We have to stop adding additional methane into the atmosphere because the methane that's there will ultimately be gone. So we need to stop adding to methane, and that's the most critical thing. So in the context of what Irish farmers are being asked or may be asked to do, it's reasonable that we say to farmers, we have to stop adding additional methane. We have to cap those methane emissions. And that's part of the challenge in farming. And I imagine if you're sitting on the opposite side of the table from farmers, it is part of the frustration that while we have a very efficient production system in terms of carbon and in terms of methane emissions, the growth in the sector is leading to a net increase in our emissions. Mm. So that is a problem, and the sector has to face that and it has to do something about that. I think where the wheels come undone a little bit is when we're talking about deep cuts in agricultural emissions, which is largely 60% of it is methane. Then you're talking about going beyond what science says is required in methane. And it's going beyond what's asked of other sectors. And you could do that. I mean, from a policy perspective, it does make sense if you want to get a cooling impact in the atmosphere. So one of the things that methane does is if we actually pull a lot of, if we make deep cuts in our methane emissions, we can get rapid cooling much quicker. And that's obviously very beneficial. And oil and gas exploration, you know, are huge sources of methane emissions. And there's a plan in place globally to reduce those emissions by 30%. Makes huge economic sense for those sectors. And it's a real low-hanging fruit, can be done. But doing it in agriculture is almost in a sense saying that farmers have to undo some of the global Ireland's warming that was caused by other sectors like transport. And politically, you might say, well, that's what we want to do. But that comes with a cost. And I suppose, you know, my sense and my belief is that that's a public good value that farmers should be paid for if that's where the political will is and if that's where the political will travels on this. They're the kind of discussions that I suppose we're probably not hearing, Jack. And it's a little bit frustrating that it's simply a discussion about you know, about emissions. You know, I think the other side are correct, and it is correct to say that agriculture, we have to stop growing the methane emissions. And that's very much central, and you've written about it before, to what's come out of the Dairy Vision group in terms of the draft report that's gone to the minister. But that is going to be very important. But the deep cuts, I think it's going to step further than probably what science demands of us at this point in time.
FarmersMarket.ie is the new farming classifieds website and app brought to you by the Irish Farmers Journal. Buy and sell everything farming from machinery and livestock to property and much more. Visit FarmersMarket.ie today and place your first ad for just €1 using code WELCOME. Terms and conditions apply.
I come to you in a minute, Phelim, in terms of what's happening maybe in South America. But I mean, Anne, when you speak of deep cuts, The European angle on this, there was two kind of pieces that happened in the last week. One was the European Parliament vote, we'll say, in terms of the Green Deal and what happened there. And the other piece was what happened in the Netherlands last Friday when the Minister for Nitrogen and Nature, I suppose, it kind of outlined her plan for reducing agriculture or reducing farming in the Netherlands, where she talked about some regions having to maybe destock by, up to 100%, so it's huge and significant cuts in terms of the numbers of stock in the Netherlands, which of course is in a different space to what where we are in Ireland, but it just shows the kind of the noise that's there, and that's at boiling point now in the Netherlands, and there's going to be, the government could potentially fall over it. There will be protests in the streets, there's no doubt about it, etc., in terms of the farmer rebellion in terms of what's happening there. But talk to me first, Anne, just in terms of the European Parliament vote and the Green Deal, and kind of that was what was that again? And it was the next step along the lines of kind of implementing the Green Deal, and what's the significance of that vote last week?
Well, it was certainly dramatic, the happenings in the Parliament last week. So ultimately for the European Union to give effect to the Green Deal, which is, it's the strategy and the policy to take us into the climate and environmentally friendly transition that all of society has to go towards, it requires a whole body of legislation, which is known as Fit for 55. And this is the legislation that seeks to get emissions, to reduce emissions by 55% by 2030 in the European Union. So last week, three pieces of legislation came into the European Parliament for voting, for discussion and voting. And I suppose reading up on it after the fact, it appeared that the sense was that the work had been done in the Committee on the Environment, Public Health and Food Safety, and that this would go through Parliament. But the wheels very much came off the wagon in Parliament. The first piece of legislation that came for a vote was the European, the emissions trading scheme. And this was about enhancements and additions to the scheme. And Parliament descended into chaos is putting it too far, but certainly in terms of positioning yourself as, the climate leaders in the world, certainly the scenes didn't stand up to that. So what in the end, the ETS legislation was rejected by a really motley crew of, the Greens, who felt that the legislation didn't go far enough. Pro-business votes that felt that, this was going too far in terms of the impact on business, and some on the far right who are, outright climate deniers. So I think, and it took the other two pieces of legislation, didn't go to a vote, they were withdrawn and all sent back to committee for review. But I think, so standing back and looking at it, I mean, I think it really shows the challenge that's out there, particularly at this point of in time when, in Europe, we're in the midst of a cost of living crisis. We've talked at length about the issues around energy prices, energy availability, and this is the summer. So it hasn't really hit until we go into the winter. And there is, that concern around, how far do we need to go to make the appropriate steps in terms of, getting climate back on track, keeping warming within that 1.5 degrees to 2.2 degrees range that was agreed at the Paris Agreement. And how far is too far in terms of pushing society and citizens too far at this point in time? And I think it's interesting because we're coming into the emissions ceilings discussions in Ireland, and I think it does give a sense that it is going to be very challenging.
Does. I mean, and in complete contrast, then, Valem, you have a lovely piece there on Brazil, just a kind of an update in terms of what's happening there in terms of stock numbers and what the kind of vision is for agriculture there in Brazil. Talk to us.
Yes, Jack. Well, while Anne was busy just unearthing and explaining how we would have to have cuts in the Irish herd to achieve the target that are being talked about, up around 30% reduction in emissions for 2030. Brazil have a totally different picture for 2030. There, the trade association that represents meat factories in Brazil released their annual report over this last week for 2022. And they're saying that to meet the demand for beef that they're going to have by 2030, they'll need to increase output by 35%. Now, they're looking at achieving some of this through productivity gains, through efficiency. But you know what the real bottom line is, Jack? They're looking at an 8 million increase in cattle numbers that go through their factories by 2030. Now, 8 million head a year, Jack, just to put that in context, Irish factories at their... they've only once or twice crossed 2 million head. Currently, the top and for the past 20 years has been 1.8 million. So we're looking there at Brazil increasing their cattle throughput by four times the annual Irish output. So while we look at how we might be cutting, Brazil are looking at how they might expand. And then, of course, you know, the other reality of life is that this comes at a cost. What's making it happen? They have huge areas of the rainforest that are continuing to be cleared. You know, in the month of April this year alone, an area of over 1,000 kilometers squared. Now, just to put that in context, we're talking about an area that's bigger than the counties, the three smallest counties in Ireland, Louth, Dublin and Carlow. An area bigger than those have been cleared, and it's nearly twice as much as was cleared in the same month last year. So this is the irony, and this is where looking at Ireland in isolation is such an anomaly, if you like, or indeed the wider European Union for that matter. The whole issue of climate change and tackling emissions is a global one, but we're going nowhere very fast if we are doing what we're proposing to do, and we look across the Atlantic into the Southern Hemisphere, and this is going on in Brazil.
Now, just to be clear, Phil, like, I mean, that is the meat factories in Brazil. Is it a wish list of theirs rather than, or do you feel it's closer to what will actually happen, you know?
No, they're actually using government statistics for their figures in the numerous in terms of what they project the throughput to be. It's their own analysis that suggests that they need 35% more beef to meet the demand that they will have by 2030. But in terms of cattle numbers and cattle throughput in their factories, it is government figures that they're quoting.
Yeah, I mean, and to bring it, so we talked about the legislation in Ireland, in the European Parliament. We talked about what the government in and the people in and the farmers in Brazil are doing in South America. How do you square this circle in terms of the, as Phelan says, the global piece there around climate, as opposed to just looking at it from an Irish context or Kenya?
Yeah, I don't know, Jack. I mean, On one level, you get the sense that, like, food systems are different. You know, the world works on energy and food. You know, they sustain, and water, they sustain all of our lives. You know, is this going to work where we have national plans looking at food systems, particularly in the context of where we're at now with Russia's war in Ukraine and what that has done to food systems globally? You know, is there a more international context that's required here in terms of what's possible? And I mean, look, when you think, like, that's being idealistic. How does something like that work, and can it work? But, you know, the concern is that the wheels will come off the wagon if we do go down the road of these, like, various national plans, some of them that are totally opposing. And they could come off the wagon in terms of climate, in that, you know, internationally we know where meat, what agriculture should do, and we impose restrictions on systems like the Irish system. And I was reading a paper this morning by an academic in the UK who's talking about, actually, you know, the type of impact that it could have on pastoral systems in developing countries, which really that shouldn't be what our intention is here, that we're saying that pastoral systems that are so fundamental to the economics in these developing regions, that they should be reduced or done away with and lands put into conservation. Like, some of this doesn't make sense. And where does it end? Does it end? Do we end up with much more frequent and bigger food security issues? And people will argue, well, look, food security, we don't need diets based on meat and protein. But in reality, if you look at what the FAO are saying, you know, we're talking about potentially cutting production. We are an exporting nation of livestock proteins, but there isn't a corresponding reduction in demand out there. We know that demand is going to continue and stabilize out over the rest of the decade. So, you know, it doesn't make sense. It will be filled from somewhere. There's no easy solution. But do we end up in a situation where we end up in crisis somewhere down the road? And it's going to be very, you know, if that's the case, it's going to be very difficult to unpick some of what we do now. In saying all of that, Jack, I think it is important for us to say, look, none of this is to say that, you know, we're advocating that farming doesn't need to play its part or do its fair share, because it does. And I think farming's part and farming's fair share in the Irish context is going to be huge, and it's going to be significant. And there'd be a significant ask of farmers. And I suppose that's one of the challenges with this. You kind of go, there are going to be so many asks of farmers. You know, if we don't get that right, and if we don't get the policy and the communication of that right, we actually won't meet the big issues that really will make a difference in trying to meet some of the ones that are just frustrating the sector and that don't make scientific sense.
Yeah, no, excellent. We'll watch this space, and no doubt we'll talk about it again in future podcasts. And Phelim, speaking of wheels coming off the wagon, the Brexit piece took a twist this week that I suppose had been talked about, but it when it actually landed, and if the consequences, I suppose, follow through, it can be very significant for Ireland, but maybe particularly even more so for Northern Ireland.
Yes, Jack, this is one that is starting to look very messy at this stage. Now, of course, the good thing is, you know, the UK government introduced legislation to Parliament this week. There's a long way to go between introducing legislation and having it on the statute book. That time creates a window of space, I suppose, to allow a negotiation, to allow thoughts. But the problem is, Jack, this whole Brexit thing has been negotiated now since June 2016, 6 years ago at this stage, and it has been different points of close to agreement, close to breakup, and everything in between. We thought we had agreement. We had a protocol put in place to accommodate Northern Ireland's place, if you like, in both the UK and getting access to the EU single market. What the UK government has done this week is they're frustrated with progress on discussions with the EU about relaxing checks on product going into Northern Ireland from Britain, which is a problem. We cannot deny that. That is the reality of Brexit. But the bottom line is the UK legislation drives the proverbial coaching forward through the protocol, and it's essentially looking to wipe out all of the things that have been agreed that was approved by the UK Parliament as part of the deal. Now, the big question now is, how does the EU react to this? They have announced, just as we went to press, that they were going to commence legal proceedings on this. And, you know, the view is that this will not stick up in international law. But look, that's a long, slow process. What you'd be hoping now is that both sides put their heads together, that they put a solution into place. Now, the bit that worries me, and looking sort of three moves ahead here and a solution not being found, is that ultimately this could collapse the trade and cooperation agreement. And while you're right, Jack, to say that the most immediate threat is to Northern farmers who export a third of their milk, about 800 million litres a year, south of the border for processing. And, you know, if that is stopped and frustrated by border controls, then the reality is that's an issue for processors south of the border that rely on that. So that's the first challenge in it. Look, ultimately, if this trade and cooperation agreement, the Brexit deal, if you like, if that collapses and you get into the no deal situation, then the reality for Irish farmers is that there's a €1 billion tariff there on the trade that takes place between Ireland and Britain every year. And that is simply an area that we do not want to even contemplate what it might look like, because if there was a no-deal Brexit, the reality is that the bill for that stops at the door of Irish farmers. And that's what we've explored this week a little bit in the Farmers' Journal. And it's a scenario we hope never arises, but it's one that we do well to be aware of as the worst-case scenario outcome.
So you're like Ronnie O'Sullivan, Phelim, you're looking a couple of moves down the line, like in terms of where it's going to end up. But is there something in the interim? As you say, we've been discussing this for six years. Like, but is there something that the Irish industry needs to do, kind of leaving aside the whole Brexit piece and the trade piece, in terms of diversifying away from the UK market? And I know we've talked about that before, you know, and it is, I suppose, happening. But but it's difficult to get away from it when it's your nearest neighbour and it's a high value market.
Yeah, Jack, look, diversification of markets is something that I've been listening to for all of the, I was going to say years, it's now decades that I've been in or around the industry. And look, international markets are developing. They've developed very well in your sector, in the dairy sector, where we are globally competitive with any other producer in the world. We're also globally competitive, although it's a difficult time at the minute, on pig meat and indeed sheep meat. So, you know, those sectors are fine. The difficulty is when we come down to beef. You know, at the end of the day, the UK have a deficit that they need to import 20% of the beef that they consume every year. We're net exporters, so that is the perfect marriage in terms. And also our processing industry is overlapped between both jurisdictions. So there's a natural fit there of Irish beef supplying the British market, and it has that way been that way for centuries. So diversification away from that is something, yes, it can happen, but we're talking about a percentage point or two in an industry that exports 90% of what it produces. Almost half of that goes to the UK. So a little bit of a movement won't make a major difference. The reality is that any threat to the UK market for the Irish beef sector is really, really desperate bad news for the Irish farmers.
What do you see? You talked about the EU and the legislation piece kind of enacted this week in response to Liz Truss's developments. What do you see kind of as happening in the next kind of, you know, 2-3 weeks, Phelim, in the short term, I call it, rather than calling the kind of the long term piece? What do you see happening in the next 2 or 3 weeks?
Basically nothing in the next 2-3 weeks, Jack. And I would imagine we'll have a few weeks now in the lead up to summer holidays where there'll be a bit of shadow boxing goes on. We would be hoping that there is a serious negotiation between the EU and UK over the autumn months that leads to this legislation in the UK Parliament being quietly dropped or dramatically modified, that a way is found to reduce the intensity and the need for checks for product going from Britain into Northern Ireland that's not going anywhere else. You know, the sad reality is here that this has got wrapped up in the wider politics of Westminster and indeed of Stormont. But the reality is like that there is a landing zone that people that would look at this with a commercial lens could see would work out. And I suppose we're all hoping that common sense prevails, that we don't get to the worst case scenarios that would cause all the problems that we've just talked about there.
Brilliant, Phelim. Listen, I'm going to leave it at that for this week. We've talked long enough, and there are two great topics, the climate piece and the Brexit piece, that have huge implications for the agribusiness industry, including farmers right across the island. So it's been great to get your insights in terms of bringing us right up to speed on where we are now. And there's lots more in the Farmers Journal this week on both of those topics that are, I'm sure, of huge interest to a lot of readers. So we'll leave it there for this week. Thanks for that. Thanks to Phelim. Thanks to Anne. And we'll chat again next week.
We hope you enjoyed this Irish Farmers Journal podcast. You can find all our podcasts at farmersjournal.ie/podcast and on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.